website, and you will find out that it's a wealth of good information, and we'll point you in the right direction toward the big stories every single day without a, like she said, without a political twist on it. Just truth. That's all. And I appreciate her very much. She's been around doing what we do for a long, long time now. First met Carolyn, actually have never met her in person, but actually first started conversing back when right before Air America was getting started. So, and we'll start talking about that in a little while coming up as well. Right now we're going to pause for news coming up at the top of the hour. You're listening to the Guy James Show on the Head On Radio Network. We'll be back right after the news.
Opposition leaders. She wants to replace current President General Pervez Musharraf, who imposed emergency rule earlier this month. Musharraf appointed an interim prime minister to run the government until parliamentary elections are held in January. In a speech today, Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas called for the overthrow of the Hamas leaders in Gaza. They took over power by force earlier this year. The U.S. is hosting a Middle East peace conference later this month. The UN Nuclear Watchdog Agency reports that Iran has generally been truthful about main aspects of its nuclear history. However, the agency warns that its current knowledge of Tehran's atomic work is decreasing. It also finds that Iran continues to defy the UN Security Council demands to halt the enrichment of uranium, which is a key step in the production of nuclear weapons or energy. Several strong aftershocks with a magnitude 6.2 and 6.6 struck northern Chile less than 24 hours after yesterday's 7.7 magnitude earthquake. About 15,000 people have been left homeless, 150 people were injured, and two were killed by the first quake. A powerful cyclone hit Bangladesh and forced more than 3 million people to flee their homes and head inland. It had 149 mile-an-hour winds. You're listening to the Quality News Network, Science and Business Next.
Have you ever found yourself swatting at a fly no one else sees? Chances are you're seeing what we commonly call a floater. Many people have them and have had them for a while. Floaters are condensed proteins located in the gel-like part of our eyes called the vitreous. As we age, this gel becomes more liquefied, and so whatever debris was once trapped inside is now freer to float around. They are typically harmless, but you should check with your eye doctor if you notice new floaters, especially if they appear after a flash of light, or if you should notice a curtaining effect of your side vision. Otherwise, that squiggly critter you see, especially when you look at a blue sky or a white background, is probably with you for life and should simply be ignored. I'm Dr. Nancy Eklund.
The preceding message on eye care by Dr. Nancy Eklund has been brought to you as a public service by the Quality News Network. For more information, please contact your eye doctor.
A federal appeals court today voided the new mileage standards for light trucks that were set to go into effect next year. 11 states and environmental groups filed the lawsuit, which would have covered SUVs, minivans, and pickup trucks. At the Los Angeles Auto Show, the Chevrolet Tahoe Hybrid was named the Green Car of the Year. It is General Motors' first model to use a hybrid system developed with BMW, Mercedes, and Chrysler. AAA expects that a record number of Americans, 38.7 million, will travel at least 50 miles or more over the extended five-day Thanksgiving. Holiday period. Gasoline prices nationwide now average $3.11 a gallon. President Bush announced a plan today to allow the airlines to use military airspace to relieve air traffic congestion over the Thanksgiving travel period. The Labor Department reports that consumer prices went up 0.3% in October. London-based Barclays announced it will write down $2.7 billion related to the U.S. subprime mortgage market. Gold is trading at $787.30 an ounce, light sweet crude trading at $93.43 a barrel. And near the close of Wall Street today, the Dow Jones is down 122 points, the NASDAQ is down 26 points, and the S&P 500 is down 19. There's always more at our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Ali Dramov.
James Show is on in less than 1 minute.
Life, you hear me? Give my creation life.
So this was fun.
You're going to like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Any questions before we proceed?
Begin countdown. Six. Five, four, three, two, one.
You have entered a restricted broadcast area. You have entered a restricted broadcast.
This is the Guy James Show. James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
I couldn't resist. You knew I couldn't. It's that big week for the greatest spectacle in sports, the greatest rivalry ever, the Ohio State University against the University of Meat Chicken. And it'll be played up in Ann Arbor, Meat Chicken, this Saturday. And looking for a great game, and a good time will be had by all, as usual. One of the great events in sports, without question. So that for all of our OSU fans. And as you well know, I'm a little bit of a Buckeye myself, okay? 866-546-5254. Coming up in just a few minutes, we've got Mark Green, president of Air America, author of the new book, Losing Our Democracy, and we'll be talking to him coming up in just a couple of minutes. We appreciate very much having Carolyn Kay on with us today. Carolyn's always delighted, corresponded with her a lot, but never had a chance to actually talk with her today. I see that Junior Bush is they're having another little dance coming up, that he wants to make a recess appointment, planning on it. Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid is considering what they call pro forma sessions during the Thanksgiving break to stop President Bush from using the break to install any of his outstanding executive branch nominees. And, of course, this controversial Surgeon General nominee, Dr. James Holsinger, is expecting a recess appointment. In fact, he's resigned his job at the university and told everybody that he is going to get a recess nomination. So we shall see. If there's a way to get it done, I think they will get it done. Junior's very good at putting it over on Harry and the boys, very much so. And as something comforting, as someone that flies every now and then, the Government Accountability Office reports government investigators smuggled liquid explosives and detonators through airport checkpoints, exposing dangerous vulnerabilities in security efforts. Oh, that's nice to know. Said our tests clearly demonstrate that a terrorist group using publicly available information and a few resources could cause severe damage to an airplane and threaten the safety of passengers, the report said. Well, isn't that just dandy? And one more thing. As you well know by now, billionaire investor Warren Buffett has urged Congress to maintain the estate tax. This is one of the richest people saying to keep the estate tax, saying that plans to repeal the tax would benefit a handful of the richest American families and widen income disparity in the United States. Buffett said it would be more appropriate to call the death tax a death present for the wealthy. And it's good that somebody, especially with the as renowned as Warren Buffett, and respected as Warren Buffett, says that. So that's a good thing. We're going to pause for a break real quick here and be back in just a minute. We're going to get Mark Green on the phone, and we'll be back in just a sec.
I frame the question in these stark terms.
Are we going to continue to invest American blood and treasure at the same rate we are doing now? For what?
If we continue what you have laid before the Congress here as a strategy, do you feel that that is making America safer?
Sir, I don't know, actually.
All right, we're back, and as promised today, you know, I don't care if you worship the ground Junior Bush walks on or if you share my view that he's the worst president ever, you'll have to admit that he's dramatically altered the balance of power in Washington, D.C. And with us today to explain just how dramatic that change has been is Mark Green. Mark was, as you many of you know, a candidate for mayor of New York, and he was a candidate for attorney general of New York, written a lot of books. He's the president of Air America, and a great new book out, Losing Our Democracy, How Bush, the Far Right, and Big Business Are Betraying America and How to Stop It. Mark, welcome to the program.
I'm delighted to be with you guys. Thanks for thinking of me.
Well, it's hard to avoid you nowadays. You're just all over the place. Every time you're on Keith's show, and I'm not trying to avoid you, but I got your book on Tuesday. I'm about three quarters of the way through it. I haven't had a chance to finish it yet, but it's a good read. It's something that's creeping up on us that I just don't think a lot of people understand, that little by little by little, that frog in the water thing, our democracy is starting to slip away.
Well, there have been a lot of books and critics of Bush Cheney, but I thought it important to have someone connect the dots, as they say, of all their bad decisions. And if you look at their contempt for the rule of law and equal justice under law, if you look at how secretive they are, if you look at how they've merged church and state, for example, how unaccountable they are in promoting the people from Wolfowitz to Tenet with medals of honor who have messed up, if you look at the how indifferent they have been to civil rights, or hostile to civil rights and civil liberties, it adds up to a conclusion. I've never seen a administration so contemptuous of the values of the American democracy. We've had others who've made bad decisions, but this is the most sustained assault on our 218-year tradition of democracy. Still the best definition, Guy, is a system of by and for the people of Abraham Lincoln. And if listeners think, oh, democracy, it's a process, I mean, come on, how does that affect the air, the education, the Iraq war? Think of a car without a motor. The motor is the democracy, which makes sure everybody has a shot at contributing so that the best decisions come out of the process. And if people are not allowed to vote explicitly or implicitly, and if there are secrets that the voters don't know about, and if the law is not applied equally, then we have a crisis in the way you describe. It may not be too hot every day, but the frog is dying incrementally as the temperature goes up in the boiling water.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, a lot of Americans have the mistaken idea that that our democracy can't be taken away from us except by some foreign source. And that's not true, is it? I mean, isn't it an internal threat just as dangerous or even more so because of its, well, kind of like its stealthiness, although these guys have been rather in your face with it?
Well, these are people who, as they fly the flag, are trampling on its values far more than a few fools every year who burn it. But the problem is a couple of drunk kids who burn the flag, forgive me, we're bigger and better than that. However, extremism, posturing as patriotism, is a problem. Look, I don't mind a healthy debate on choice, on invading the wrong country after 9/11, but when the president and Cheney said in the fall of 06 that if Democrats win, terrorists win. When the president imprisons people and the Supreme Court, a majority of whom are Republican appointees, say that it violates due process to have hundreds of people in Guantanamo without due process of law. Or when the courts say, and the Justice Department admits, they broke the law in not getting warrants for wiretapping of American citizens, that's radical. It's not left-right radical, it's anti-American radical. So I believe that, frankly, Air America and you, Guy, and are in the mainstream, and these new authoritarians are in the extreme, and I think history will reflect that.
Do you think that when this whole thing started with Cheney and Bush, do you think this whole erosion of our democracy within their administration got started because of the war, or do you think the Junior Bush and Cheney and their people had it planned from the very beginning?
I can't know that, but it's a very good question. You know, Congressman Dick Cheney in 1987 wrote in a report on the so-called Iran Contra scandal. Hey, sometimes the president has to ignore the law and act like a monarch in a time of war. Oh, that's interesting. George W. Bush ran as a moderate Republican, as it was a moderate governor, bipartisan, moderate governor in Texas, and never hinted at anything like this extremism in 2000. Now comes along 9/11, and they are waving that as a bloody shirt to justify every violation of the law. Of course, we're fighting in Iraq, theoretically, to defend democracy, so it's odd that we want to export it while we violate it at home. So there's an inherent contradiction in what they're doing. I think the war has allowed them to act on their anti-democracy impulses. And since half of Bush's base are the evangelical Christian Republicans who don't much, who value the Bible more than the Constitution, that's okay if they believe that. It's not okay if the President of the United States believes that. And I'll tell you, Guy, I'll yield to no one. My knowledge of and the impact on me and my family of 9/11, other than those who died that day, I saw the plane 2 seconds later with its tail sticking out of the World Trade Center. And as important as 9/11 was and is, it's not more important than our 200-year history and Constitution.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. And, you know, in Bush's background, it's not like, you know, he hasn't preached democracy, nor has he been part of any kind of a democratic organization. But instead, he's been involved with big autocratic business people most
Absolutely.
Of his life. So I'm not sure he understands.
Everybody comes from somewhere. And he comes out of the business community, the CEO community, which is hierarchical. His supporters are often very religious, and that's a clerical community, which the flock doesn't really tell the pulpit what to say or do. And he doesn't, and I don't remember him ever giving a speech as a governor or as a candidate saying, we need more democracy. Here's what I'm going to do to increase voting. Here's what I'm going to do to increase transparency. Here's what I'm going to do to stop voter suppression. Never. All his talk about democracy is outside this country. And Eric Severide said, you can't want democracy abroad while you don't have it at home.
Who can argue with Eric Severide? I mean, after all. Yeah, and what gall it takes to be saying that you're promoting democracy in the Middle East and elsewhere in the world, all the while you've been doing your damnedest to destroy it right here at home. It's incredible to me that what we've shown the rest of the world during this time, here we are saying democracy in the Middle East, and yet...
Now, absolutely. Now you asked an earlier question. When you're at war, now this is not World War One or World War Two. Forgive me. It's a war of choice, a mistaken war. Three-quarters of Americans realize we shouldn't be there. And we attacked the country that didn't attack us, everyone now acknowledges. But what Bush is saying is we have to sometimes suspend the law, hence his so-called signing statements, because of a war on terrorism. Oh, by the way, folks, the war on terrorism is unending because there'll always be a terrorist. I mean, we could, and thankfully did, conquer Nazi Germany, and now Germany is prosperous, Western, and democratic. So if you allow the president to be a monarch forever, this reminds me of James Madison's famous statement that you cannot maintain freedom in a constant state of war. And that's what Bush Cheney want. Now, they're going to be out because of term limits and or unpopularity, and the Congress, of course, went democratic. Democrats are imperfect. That's not my point. But I'll tell you, whatever you think of Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid, they don't wake up thinking about what laws they can violate and come up with excuses to act like Richard Nixon or the dictators we fought.
Absolutely. And you know, they've used 9/11 to spread fear, and they've used the fear to advance some pretty anti-democratic agendas. You know, the torture, the outing CIA people, the FISA, the warrantless wiretapping. Do you think he could have gotten away with any of this without using fear, the fear of another 9/11 as a club on the American people? And furthermore, it appears to me that we've got another guy trying to wait in the wings, a fellow New Yorker there, to keep this agenda going right on in the name of one Rudy Giuliani.
They could have gotten away with it. It's the most explicit fear-mongering I've ever seen. Let us stipulate that Joe McCarthy was a more noxious drunk and personal horror than George W. Bush. You don't want to have lunch with McCarthy. I can see having lunch with Bush. However, Joe McCarthy couldn't unilaterally invade two Muslim countries, one erroneously. He couldn't unilaterally suspend the Constitution, though he would have liked to. So Bush is more menacing than McCarthy because of his power. Now, here's Giuliani. Let me share with your audience that I know him not just as a New Yorker. He was the ranking Republican, of course, as mayor. I was the number two citywide official as the elected public advocate in New York. So we went at it for 8 years. I watched him. He has, Guy, the intelligence and the work ethic to be president. He does not have the temperament or the character. Anybody listening who really likes George W. Bush's messianic, militaristic, stubborn, my way or the highway ways will love Rudy Giuliani. Because when he governed as a chief executive in a city, he was sued 23 times for violating speech, you know, shutting down advertisements, trying to shut down a museum. 21 or 23 times, this lawyer lost in court. He refused to meet with the leading black officials of the state and the city for years at a time. And when when someone criticized him, his answer wasn't, well, let's debate this. He would try to destroy the reputation of his opponents with personal attacks. So I don't think he'll be the nominee or the president. But if you care about if losing our democracy is convincing that there's a way to save our democracy, hence our last chapter, Guy, the way to make sure that we're not losing it but actually lose it is to elect Giuliani.
Oh, I quite agree. The guy frightens me. It really does.
I see, though, in Florida, he's tied with Hillary Clinton in general election.
Yes, well, I live here, but I don't represent. I live in Southwest Florida, the bastion of conservatism in the Naples, Fort Myers area. Couldn't be more red than it is here. Yeah. It amazes me what these fellows try and get away with. And when you stop back, they've used the war as an excuse for everything now. Thinking back through history, I know Harry Truman at least thought about suspending some of our freedoms during a war. Didn't Truman, maybe my memory is wrong here, but didn't Truman and Fulbright, for example, have some hearings as to what we could and could not do during the war?
Senator Harry Truman, during the World War II, shortly after Pearl Harbor, held hearings on how there were rip-offs by defense contractors costing billions and costing lives, the Halliburtons of that era. By the way, even though he did that during the war, of course, Franklin Roosevelt later chose him as vice president, very consequentially, in 1944. J. William Fulbright, the senator from Arkansas, held hearings during the Vietnam War and exposed and explained what was going wrong with that war. So this is traditional. While the Bush-Cheney regime was in power and in Congress for 6 years, there were no hearings on Iraq. None. Now, of course, especially led by Congressman Henry Waxman of California and his government reform and oversight committee, there have been hearings showing the waste, the fraud, the unnecessarily lost lives, and democracy is very enduring. So I am confident if people vote based on democracy and that they have all the information that this fear-mongering will end. However, 9/11, people like to avoid pain. And when you scare people that the Russians are coming or the terrorists are coming and there are threats out there, it can scare enough people. It worked in 2002. It worked in 2004. But they run out the string. And the public now, I don't think, will be gulled as they were before.
Well, that old sky is falling routine. It's got to stop sooner or later. I want to ask you a broad question about your book. Do you think there's a broad enough audience for the book? And what I mean is, I know almost my entire audience most likely agrees with every point you've made in it. And those on the right probably disagree with every word of it. But being as polarized as we are today in the U.S., who are you planning to reach with your book?
Well, two steps. One is there's nothing wrong with informing and exciting your base. So when Fox Cable keeps telling its listeners, implying that Saddam was behind 9/11 and we got to stop his weapons of mass destruction. It's a bad example, but a true one. It excites the base, and they're allowed to do it. So I want to inform everyone listening that while immediate issues are urgent, global warming, Iraq, saving Social Security, none of that can work unless we make sure we expand the franchise and appoint judges who enforce the law irrespective of politics. Now, at the same time, you want to reach out to other audiences. And you know, Guy, there are moderate Republicans of good faith, former Congressman Jim Leach, General Anthony Zinni, former Senator James Danforth, former National Security Advisor Brent Scowcroft. These are all good Republicans who are ashamed and horrified by these extremists in the White House. And so I hope that fair-minded people will either read Losing Our Democracy or hear our show or see a summary or a review of it, and it may educate a handful of people, especially young people, who when they decide what party to go for often stick with that party. So it's a fight for the hearts and minds of everyone, but especially the young, to determine next generational politics.
Oh, I so hope you're right. Are there that many people who have changed their mind about Bush? I mean, has it been the loss of American lives in the war, or has it been the staggering cost of the whole thing, or the apparent willingness to deprive us of some of our freedoms? What exactly do you think has driven these people away from Bush, and did they see it in him? What did they see him in him in the first place?
Well, the false assurances that the reasons for the war are weapons of mass destruction at all. People now see that was false. Second, they were told it would be a piece of cake, a cakewalk, wouldn't take more than 6 weeks, or certainly not more than 6 months, to quote then-Secretary Rumsfeld. And now the cost in blood and treasure, loss of esteem around the world, the $1.5 trillion in costs, according to the congressional estimate of this week, has soured people. It's a big number of people, Guy. Let's say Bush gets elected with 50% or so. His numbers rose to 55 to 60% at his second inaugural, which is normal. It rose to 80% after 9/11, of course, just prior to that, because the country was rallying behind him. Well, it's gone from 80, 60, 50 to 30. And if you go from 80% to 30% favorable, by definition, that's 50 points over 80 points. A majority of the people who at one time said Bush was their guy have dropped him. I don't mean a little incremental loss. I mean a collapse. So he may be able to walk into hell to the chief. He may be able to launch an attack because he's commander-in-chief. But he has lost the goodwill of Americans, lost the trust of Americans, and he's earned that failure, as we try to connect the dots in Losing Our Democracy.
I think it's we're at the point now that those who are still solidly behind him and his policies, that section of people, that piece of the pie, is probably not worth trying to even talk to those people anymore.
I hope I don't insult anybody in your audience, but 42% of Americans believe in demonic possession. Okay, I'm not going to win a debate with them. I'm just not. And to support Bush after all these court decisions, after the failure in Iraq, the failure of Katrina, what are called E. coli conservatives, all those who are against government regulation until Enron and E. coli bacteria show how the market system and foodstuffs, you know, we have to protect against them. The arguments won't work anymore. And a quarter of Americans believed in Richard Nixon when he quit, and that's the base.
Yeah,
the base.
Oh, that's scary. You know, they've used this fear card over and over again. The threat of terrorism. We hear that war on terror. All the, you know, didn't we have a whole lot more of a threat to our democracy from the Nazis and the Soviet Union, and yet, you know, we survived both of those things, and yet still these guys have used this fear card to make it sound like this is the greatest threat there's ever been to our nation, and I don't think it is.
You know, former Vice President Al Gore, 2 years ago, pre-laureate, said, you know, if our Constitution largely stayed intact, with exceptions, I mean, it's a shameful thing that Franklin Roosevelt incarcerated Japanese Americans, and it was ruled unconstitutional, and they apologized later. But if we didn't engage in this level of illegality and betrayal of our values in against the Nazis, against the fascists, is the current threat really worse? You know, the Soviets, of course, could have destroyed America. That's a threat. And we had to navigate that, and we did it painfully but successfully. Not going to war, but they collapsed of their own contradictions. So why this time? And I think the answer is to keep a certain junta in power. Sorry, but that's what's going on. And they will apparently say or do anything to maintain power, but I think the public is now immunized to them because of how many things they've said that have turned out to be false. I have 20 pages in Losing Our Democracy where they say something. Oh, the Pentagon says, we didn't use white phosphorus on the Iraqis. We wouldn't do that. Well, we did. Or, I never said that there was an imminent threat to America, said George Bush. Again and again, he did.
Yes.
When you look at this Niagara of untrue, false, or misleading statements, I don't know why any journalist will ever quote Dick Cheney again with a straight face.
No, I don't either.
I mean, that sounds harsh, but...
not harsh. You can prove it. I mean...
List everything he said, and the record speaks for itself.
I've got pages and pages. I've heard you say, I forget where, probably on another interview, that you were a couple of senators like Tom Coburn away from losing our democracy, or a couple of justices like Anton
yes.
Scalia, or maybe one more president away. You know, that could happen at any time, and another justice like Scalia could happen within a week. And God only knows what kind of a guy another red state Oklahoma might send in. I mean, we've got guys like Tom Tancredo and Duncan Hunter, for God's sake, in Washington, D.C., along with a lot more. Do you think America's going to come around and understand the threat to some of these people?
Here's how close we are. Of course, if a justice dies and it was 2000 to 2006, Bush could have gotten another Scalia or Thomas, and of course did get Roberts and Alito. If an Asian Pacific Islander American hadn't filmed Senator George Allen calling him macaca, a slur which helped elect Jim Webb, that one film, that Webb victory, changed the Senate from Republican to Democrat. So without that, if another Scalia or Thomas or Alito or Roberts were nominated, they could be confirmed. With that, Guy, I don't believe this Democratic Senate, narrow majority as it is, will confirm a radical justice again. But if there's a conservative Republican elected in 2008, clearly, some of the a majority of the liberals are over 70, a majority of the conservatives are under 70 on the court. There will be another potentially one or two justices, and then you can just kiss the Clean Air Act and Roe v. Wade and speech rights goodbye. That's how close we are. We're not, of course, one Tom Coburn away from he wants to jail doctors who commit abortions because it's murder. We're not a couple of them away anymore because we now have a majority, and I, frankly, all the data indicates, although you don't want to coast, that the House and Senate will become more Democratic in 08, given the number of seats that are up from Republicans and the trend lines.
Well, it certainly needs to become, need greater majorities to overcome some of the blue dogs and all that. The George Allen story you just mentioned in the macaca thing, it just points out that the error of Democrats' ways when Harry Reid, our last Supreme Court nominee was up, and Harry Reid says, well, we've got to pick our fights, and we really didn't pick a fight on that. Maybe we couldn't have stopped it, but they could have. It just shows how important some of these singular things really are that we've thrown the towel in on many, many times.
Yeah, well, Bush is very clever. Maybe he'll pick a black moderate Republican next time and imply that Democrats are racist to oppose him or her. But I think Democrats now have been snookered several times. Roberts and Alito had nice public manners, wouldn't answer questions, and we see how radical they are. They're always for business over consumers, therefore resegregating American education. That's true. They've undermined the Brown v. Board decision and affirmative action. And so I don't think that would happen again. But look, Bush is getting his way on the war, largely because of the filibuster rule and the Constitution saying you need two-thirds vote to override a veto.
Well, I'd like to see him. I'd like to see us make him actually go ahead with a filibuster, make him put the blood, sweat, and tears into it for a change.
Well, they redid that a few months ago and got the cots out.
Yeah, lasted one whole evening.
Yeah, you got a point.
Finally, Mark, I'd like to ask you why that we on the left have such a deficit in the media. You know, despite all the claims by the right that we control the media, why are we having such a hard time promoting our message? I mean, we've got lots of talented people. Why do we have such a hard time getting a foothold? I mean, Air America, for example, getting new affiliates in major markets. I keep track of this, and it seems like we've got a hard time even keeping our heads above water. Why? Is it the nature of the beast, the listener, or is it a business problem, or is it the right-wing control of the ownership? What do you think the major problem we're facing is?
Problem one is who owns stations and who owns national radio networks. It's Republican businessmen, not always, but often. And Citadel, for example, has 258 stations and 1,000 hours of conservative talk, zero liberal talk. By the way, 60-40, maybe. 1,000 to zero? Come on. Second, radio, as you know, I know, is advertiser-supported, and a lot of corporate advertisers put Air America, our controversial, you know, happily controversial hosts, they don't want to advertise, so we're on a no-buy list, for example. And you add all this up, we're sailing into a headwind. Now, we have great talent on our air, from Lionel to Tom Hartman, Randy Rhodes, Rachel Maddow, you name it. And it's not just left-right. As you know, Guy, you got to be entertaining, informative, opinionated, but if these networks and these corporations won't allow us on, I feel like I'm playing in the World Series and Cheney is my umpire calling balls and strikes on me. It's not going to work. I'm fighting an uphill battle. One last point, Air America is going to be really working hard for more affiliates and building out our website. So anybody wants to come to airamerica.com, I hope we get eyeballs and ears reading us and listening to us. We have to be a multimedia company to survive in a world where so many people, especially younger people, get their information online, not only on air.
Well, that's one of the ways I've explained this a lot of times. It's like the old shelf space in the grocery store. You know, if you're Lay's potato chips and you got no place to put your chips, you can't buy. You know, you can't get space in the store, and that's I think what we're facing on the left with the radio stations being owned, like you said, by many of those.
What's interesting is the blogosphere. Of course, no one owns the blogosphere. Any kid with $2 to rub together could start a website. The blogosphere is Democratic, and liberals dominate in the blogosphere. There are exceptions like Drudge, but we dominate in the blogosphere because no one owns it. But when we have to go through corporate owners, then there's an inhibition that holds us back unfairly. But we're shouting at the tides, and I think we'll win.
Well, I hope you're right. We need more listeners, we need higher visibility, and we need to do a much better job in the media than we've done. We've certainly gotten beaten over the head. Hopefully.
Well, we're fighting back at Air America Radio and in losing our democracy.
Well, we
we're
are here at the Head On Radio Network. We're working hard at it, too, and it's just, I guess, something we have to persevere and stay at it. Mark, I want to thank you so much. I wish you continued success. You can get your book just about anywhere, right?
Sure, Amazon.com or a bookstore. And congratulations on Head On Radio. I follow what you do and admire it.
Losing Our Democracy, How Bush, the Far Right, and Big Business Are Betraying America, and How to Stop It by Mark Green. Mark, thanks so much for being on the
program.
Thanks
so much, Guy.
Yeah. There's a guy that knows a lot about radio. There's a guy that knows a lot about politics. Been around consumerism, big consumer advocate in New York City. Very, very, very well spoken, and a good book. I think you'll enjoy this book. And like you said, it's available just about anywhere. Hey, Bill Moyers wrote a foreword for it. How much better can you do than that? Huh? If you got Bill Moyers writing a foreword for you, you've done something right. Hey, we're going to pause for a break. We'll be back in just a minute. I love that piece. Shooby-doo-dop. Shooby-doo-bop. Welcome back to the show. You're listening to the Guy James Show, a proud member of the Head-On Radio Network, and we're glad to have all of you along with us. Our thanks today to Carolyn Kay and Mark Green for being guests on the program. I got this really cool email. That dates me, doesn't it, when I say that, really cool. I don't have sideburns and an Elvis haircut, really, I don't. I got this really cool email, there I said it again, of... of a cyber friend, and it's called. Well, let me just read it to you. I think it's great. Guess it shows the frustration of the American public right now, of the average Joe lunch bucket. You know what I mean? That guy, you, me. It shows the frustration. Guess what's in my wallet? Not your credit card anymore, or any other ones for that matter. I read in the papers, and this is the Dear Capital One, okay? Dear Capital One. I read in the papers and saw on TV how you and your pals are writing off billions of dollars worth of debts because your Harvard MBA geniuses apparently could not understand how a Ponzi scheme works. I'm sure that you will then understand how I and my debt-ridden cohorts are now deciding that if experts like you can get caught unawares, you will certainly understand why we're writing off our debts to you and your pals. We don't even owe you billions, and if we had been blessed with atomic microscope vision, a legal degree, and a patience of Job, perhaps we might have made it through all of your whereases and party of the first parts in that tissue-esque 14-page love note you send with your statements. So unless you want the cocoa-stained couch we've been paying on for 3 years now, or the outgrown shoes that Johnny left on the back seat of the car that got repossessed last week, or the other stuff that we've paid for many times, minus the late charges and 35% interest rates, this letter will have to do. Thinking about coming after our house? Well, good luck. The bank and the second mortgage holders are duking it out right now with the third mortgage holder. We're sleeping on inflatable mattresses in my sister-in-law's family room. So you say you'll ruin our credit? Take a number, pal. Maybe you can fold all these letters up and use them to level that wiggly coffee table. Sincerely, Mr. and Mrs. Chumps No More. I love that. Whoever wrote that, that is so indicative of the terrible frustration that there is right now all across America. People having such a hard time, and I know that. I'm very aware of it. I have many, many friends who could have written that letter, and I know you do as well. And when I think back over my lifetime, I think this is probably economically the most difficult time that I have seen for the average working man. And my heart and soul is always with the average working man. Those are the people I love. Those are the people I respect. Those are the people that raised me, the people I grew up with. I grew up in a farm community, and people were either farmers or lunch bucket folks. And those are the people that built America. And what, how sad it is indeed to see what's happening on the economic stage right now here in this country. There is no help. Foreclosures are at a record pace. The loss of jobs are at a record pace. The loss of benefits, the pensions are going by the wayside. The health benefits are going by the wayside. The co-pays are up. Co-pays are up, and your percentage of your premiums, if you work for somebody that provides even a modicum of health care, your percentage of the premiums is going up. Most of them have dropped dental and eye care. It's a travesty. That's what's happening, that after you work so many years for a company that you can't depend on that anymore. And I feel bad for the working people of America. And, hey, I'm one of them. And I just think, how are we going to get out from under this? How's it going to be that we get out from under this? I don't know. I just don't know. A lot of things I wanted to talk about today, but not going to get to once again. I'm really good at that, aren't I? Saying I'm going to talk about this, that, or the other thing. I did want to mention this thing, something that particularly sticks in my craw. Today, the House of Representatives passed on a largely party-line vote, legislation that would only partially fund our troops in Iraq and Afghanistan, but fully embolden our enemies. Yes, they said it again. Here we go. Embolden our enemies. Once again, the Democratic, this is coming from the White House, once again, the Democratic leadership is taking this debate down a well-worn path that calls for arbitrary withdrawal from the battlefield, despite the gains our military has made over the past year. These votes, like the dozens of previous failed votes, put the interest of radical interest groups ahead of the needs of our military and their mission. If legislation comes to the president in this form, he will certainly veto it. Congress has had ample time to pass legislation to fund our troops. The original supplemental request was made in February and augmented in October, but because congressional Democrats insist in going through with another round of political votes and vetoes, Pentagon planners will be forced to focus on accounting maneuvers instead of military maneuvers. Before Congress leaves for recess in December, it should send to the president a clean emergency funding bill without arbitrary withdrawal dates. Perhaps the president, who is not listening to the will of the people, is really the problem here. If you're going to make such sweeping claims as to say that a bill that sets deadlines for troop redeployment emboldens our enemies, you bastards, saying that once again, you put a deadline on a bill and they say, we had troop retreat, it emboldens our enemies. If you're going to say that, you ought to provide the logic and the proof within which that statement rests. You know, the whole problem is that Karl Rove and Company and that whole cabal in the White House has leaned on the trust us strategy for so long, they don't realize that it's not working anymore. And just because Perino, the president's press secretary, says it so, doesn't make it such, does it? And yet, the Democrats will go running off like a bunch of little girls over this. Oh, don't call us names. No, don't say that we've emboldened our enemies again. Oh, no. And you know all those shotgun-toting, hunting cap-wearing, Dick Cheney hunting pals are all going to jump right in on that's right. That's right. They're emboldening our enemies. Why, every time one of you people say something like that, them terrorists, they just get a little meaner and a little stronger because you might as well be get writing them a paycheck. Ah, it's disgusting. It really is. I don't know. I guess I don't have time for this. I found a fascinating nugget from American history about waterboarding. I think I'll save that for the next program. I think I'll save that. And, of course, I know you've all heard about this example of all the progress we've been hearing about in Iraq later. The leader of an anti-Al-Qaeda Sunni group is accusing U.S. troops of mistakenly killing dozens of his fighters during a battle north of Baghdad. The Sheikh told Al Jazeera television that he tried repeatedly to call American commanders and tell them that they were fighting their friends. U.S. military officials confirmed troops killed 24 fighters in a battle in the same area. The military says the clash began as soldiers searched for Al-Qaeda extremists believed hiding there. And U.S. officials say initial reports indicate soldiers looking for Al-Qaeda operatives found armed men in the area, determined they were hostile, and began firing. As troops pursued the gunmen, they came under fire from several directions and called in airstrikes. U.S. spokesmen in Baghdad say they're still gathering details of the fighting. Now, doesn't that sound familiar? Still gathering details. Oh, I love it. I make one little... the chat room. I made that little statement like, run like little girls. Says, guy, have you ever played in a women's softball league? Well, I'm not going there. No, I have not played in a women's softball league. and I don't want to claim that I could keep up with some of the great female sprinters either, so I won't go there. If I offended you with that comment, run like a bunch of little girls. Or little boys, okay? I'm talking little ones. Yeah. 866-546-5254. I guess you don't have a whole lot of time to call the program now. Getting down toward the end today. You know, I treasure my time with you each and every week. I do. I really appreciate all of the feedback that we get in each and every. I do want to remind everybody that there'll be some changes on our website coming up here pretty soon. I'm going to have a new address. It's the Guy James Show, 5390 Park Road, number 3, Fort Myers, Florida, 33908. We'll have that posted pretty soon. And we're rearranging some telephone numbers and so forth. So be sure and check out the site here in the next couple of days if you haven't already done so. Got time for, well, let me see here. I don't know. We'll try this once. We'll, okay, if the phone ever stops, got time for about 1 minute. Hi, you're listening to the Guy James Show.
Hi, Guy. It's Phil up in Daytona.
Hi, Phil. We got about 1 minute.
I hear you. Great show, and everything that's been said is all the more reason, folks, to get out there and keep pushing for impeachment. PledgeToImpeach.org, AfterDowningStreet.org, Congressman Kucinich and his legislation. Let's keep working to get petitions going. It's up to us, people. All the more reason to push for impeachment.
Bill,
thank you.
Thanks for your call.
You bet, Guy. Thanks for the show.
Well, I hope our Congress critters can show the guts it takes to go through with the hearings. I hope John Conyers will do that. Right now, I don't have a lot of hope that he's going to do that. He hadn't shown me any evidence so far that he's going to go ahead and have the hearings. We shall see. I know Dennis Kucinich has spoken to him and said that he is inclined to do so, but is getting a lot of pressure from up above. So we shall see. If it happens, that'd be a great thing. But don't hold your breath. But keep hammering away. Don't give up on that. Don't forget, stay tuned here on the Head On Radio Network. Mark's show coming up next. Bob after that. Always good programming here. You might be surprised how good the programming is here. Good as it is anywhere, or better. Let me just say it that way. I want to thank you for listening to the program, the Guy James Show here in the Head On Radio Network. Thanks to Billy Shears, music director. And I want you to remember, you heard from the radical right. Now all that's left is the truth. See you later, gang.